welcome back to the Cooligans. We're finally home after our tour. I'm exhausted, but I got a lot of miles. And in fact, what we decided to talk about first is how do we, that's right, us, me and Christian, fix the U.S. men's national team so that they win the World Cup in 2030. Wait till you hear about the cup competition I come up with.
And we told our next guest, Tyler Adams, all of our ideas.
And he hates them.
So Tyler Adams joins us to talk about and reflect on this World Cup. You're going to love our conversation with him. Also,
we do ask him about the red card.
We do ask him about the red card. And also, transfers. It's the summer transfer window. Everybody's leaving. Everybody's coming in. It's everything's happening. We talk all about it. And we talk about some of our favorite and not favorite kits of the season so far. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. So the World Cup is finally over, but one of the craziest things that happened throughout the World Cup was the flight going from Miami to Dallas. So we were obviously hosting the breakaway tour and having a great time. And the last leg of the tour, there were some sticky situations. We couldn't have any delays. We had to get to where we needed to get to.
In particular, the Dallas, Atlanta, all of that was like, if anything happens, we're screwed.
Exactly. Luckily, nothing.
And by the way, everybody was flying the same flights.
Right. So it was because the semifinals were one day apart. So we had to get from one city to the next.
We don't have Gianni Infantino's private jet.
Okay. We'll sort that out for the next World Cup. But the trip before that, so Miami to Dallas, I took a JetBlue flight and I was going, what time was the flight? Flight was like at 9 p.m. Show's the next day or something like that. So I'm like, you know, I'm just, hopefully it's not too delayed. There was already like an hour delay and it's like, all right, a little annoying because got to be up kind of early and arriving late at night.
Yeah. Sometimes when there's an hour delay, I think like, okay, I could get another free drink at the lounge. You know what I mean?
No, I do not think that. This is one less hour of sleep I'm going to be getting, right? So I get on my, after the hour delay, I get to my seat and then a lady is sitting next to me. I'm on the aisle. She's coming up and I see her walking towards the seat, stumbling. I'm like, okay, this lady wanted the extra drink during the during the delay.
Yeah.
So she's stumbling to her seat and I'm like, and this lady, I'm gonna assume kind of a waspy looking lady in her maybe 60s.
She's giving, can I speak to your manager?
Giving that. Yeah. Giving, you know, I'm a big fan of Botox, maybe a facelift. Okay. I'm good.
No, I've always looked like a catfish.
Okay. I recommended Vinicius Jr.'s surgeon, you know,
bro. So, Chinny Jr., dude.
So I'm like, okay, this lady's going to be like, at the very least, like annoying, right? She's clearly drunk. So she gets to her seat. And she's fine. She's not saying anything. I'm like, okay, great. She's probably just going to pass out or whatever. They start giving the safety instructions. And so the flight attendants, they're doing the two flight attendants that are in the aisle and holding up the mask and showing everything, you know, the
old school, they're old doing school. It themselves.
Right. Cause there's no
screens on the flight.
There's no screens on
the
flight.
First thing I thought when you said that.
Exactly. Right.
I got screwed with a few of those.
Yeah. But usually I think the flights with no screens are because you could just use your phone. So that's why, you know, you can watch movies on your phone through the Wi-Fi of the plane. So they stopped putting TVs on the planes because people just use their phones anyway.
Don't do that. Please don't do that, airlines.
So whatever. I could care less. But there was the flight attendant that was reading the instructions was like stumbling through it a little bit. Like not nailing it, right? Most of the time, you hear the instructions, you don't even pay attention to it. It is white noise because we've heard it a million times. So
this lady's remixing a little bit.
She's stumbling. She's like repeating some words. She just sounds a little bit nervous.
Yeah,
Which is odd because you're not used to you know that they've said it 1,000 times. So why would anybody like be uncomfortable giving these instructions?
Usually they're just like autopilot through it. Yeah.
So the drunk lady next to me is like looking at me as if like, isn't this an outrage?
Yeah.
How crazy is this? She's not saying the thing correctly or whatever. And I'm like, lady, nobody cares. Why are you care
this
about
this? This is the drunk lady.
The drunk lady.
And your aisle, so she's middle seat.
Yeah. And, damn. And she's really...
She's tapping you like, you believe it? You're not part of the conversation.
It's like, I mean, do you want to, you know, collectively protest about this lady?
Should we get off this flight?
So I didn't think... So whatever. She's like annoyed at this meaningless thing. And so I don't think much of it. And then once they're done with the instructions, one of the male flight attendants is walking by me. She reaches over me and taps the guy and says, excuse me. Is she drunk? The drunk lady asked the flight attendant if his co-flight attendant that was reading the instructions, is she drunk? Because
hey, she one of me?
Because she's stumbling through the thing. The guy, I'm you know, 8 inches from this guy. He's so upset. He's like, no, ma'am, she's new. And this is the first time reading the instructions. So she's just a little bit nervous.
Right. Because it turns out that's like a serious thing.
Right, right.
To suggest that.
So, okay. So I didn't think much of it. So
imagine she was like, me and this guy next to me. You're like, wait, I'm sorry, what? We think that lady's drunk.
We are so upset. Right. Right.
And he also wants to know, where should he put his gun?
So the flight attendant walks to the back of the plane. He comes back and says, hey, ma'am, we need to speak to you back here. So at this point, the plane is like already taxiing out, right? And about to take off.
Most of the time, they don't let you unbuckle your seatbelt. That's crazy. Right. Pull someone out of their seat.
So she walked to the back of the plane. I couldn't hear what was going on. She comes back. She sits down quietly, doesn't say anything. I'm assuming she got scolded and that would be the end of it. The plane is about to take off. And then another flight attendant comes onto the intercom and says, hey, we have to go back to the gate because we're concerned about the safety of the passengers on the plane. So everybody already an hour delay. Everybody's like,
do they know it's her?
So maybe like the surrounding rows know it's her. They know something's up.
Are you doing a lot of teeth? Like,
way more than that. They're like, why is it? Everybody, and this is, everybody's trying to get to the World Cup game, right? You know why everybody's going to Dallas. So
you're already delayed an hour, which sucks.
Yeah. So everybody's super frustrated. And then, she's just sitting there. Where everybody's just waiting to see what's going to happen because there's no explanation. So everybody, and so the majority of the plane has literally no idea what's going on. And then they're like, oh, there's going to be a delay because the jetway can't connect to the airplane. So now it's another like 40 minutes delay because there was like a gap between the plane and the jetway and they couldn't connect it. And it's a whole thing. So then eventually they connect it. And then somebody comes on, like a security guard, a cop comes on and to ask the lady, ma'am, we need you to step off the plane. We need to have a conversation with you. Luckily, she didn't put up much of a fight or anything. She just grabbed her bags and left.
That's interesting. Yeah. I would have assumed she was
a 1,000,000%. I'm like, okay, let me get my viral video face ready.
Because that's my first thought is you have to move for this lady to get out.
I was literally working my lines. I'm like, can you believe this?
You gotta do that. You gotta do the face. Man.
I mean,
not with me, you know.
I don't even know her.
Because now you said she's a little bit older and she's got like plastic surgery. So you probably thought you were the sugar baby. You know what I mean? You're the young Cabana boy she took on the trip with her.
I got to work on my story before my wife sees this video. You know,
so, they think you're wearing this woman's ankles as earrings, you know?
So they take off the plane and eventually the pilot gets on the mic and he's like, okay, explain what happened. And I thought he wasn't going to say what happened. I thought he was just going to be like, okay, we sorted it out. He was like, no, okay, everybody. So apparently we had someone accuse one of the flight attendants of being drunk. And because of that,
It's like a federal offense.
It's like a serious allegation. So they had to take the flight attendant off of the plane, give her a drug test, and replace her with another flight attendant. So this lady was visibly drunk, accused somebody of being drunk, delayed the flight.
And now that woman had to take a drug test.
Dude.
And she was already nervous. She was new and already nervous. And now she has to do a drug test?
It was... I felt...
God, I hope this doesn't leave a mark on her record.
I hope not either, man. I'm so devastated. And but the pilot was like, She accused one of the flight attendants of being drunk when she was clearly intoxicated herself. I'm like, and yeah, everybody was like,
spilling the tea, dog.
Thank you for letting her. You know, they could have been subtle about it. Nah, really, and they're like, nah.
She off the plane now. We can talk about it. Yo, her breath smelled like Ciroc.
So one of the most surreal moments, it ended up delaying us like almost 2.5 hours because of this lady. And got to Dallas at like 2:30 in the morning. It was brutal. And then Dallas was like the hardest show for me. I was so tired.
Yeah, that was a rough show in general.
Throughout it, yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of execs were there. So it was a little... Ugh.
I was fine with it. I mean, outside of just being tired. Anyway, yeah. But... That was one of the stories of the World Cup, even though we got plenty to share.
What right. happened to that lady?
Okay.
I heard that lady's now a flight attendant, so good for her.
Okay. She passed the test. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Yeah, we got, are we supposed to? Oh, no. Excited to be back after this crazy World Cup run. And we got...
What did we do, like 150 pieces of content?
I think so. I wasn't keeping track, but I know what my resume is gonna say. All right, I did 4,000 episodes. Oh, no, Carter,
we're not wearing IFBs. 38
shows in 37 days.
Okay,
38 shows in 37 days. Damn, that's messy level. That's messy level output
for real, bro. So where's our golden pod? You know, a golden pod for that. And we're coming back with a banger today because we spoke a lot about the U.S. men's national team. Who better to ask than one of the U.S. men's national team players about what happened?
Yo, oye, ¿qué pasó?
¿Qué pasó allá?
¿Qué tú estabas haciendo allá?
Contra Bélgica. We got a lot of questions. So we're joined by Tyler Adams.
First question, why was y'all so ass against Belgium?
Okay. There were a lot of booty butt cheeks out there. we were really concerned.
It was buns across the board.
Look, when you watch the interview, it's the same exact question. We asked the same exact question. Yeah, yeah. In the same
we
exact
may edit that out, but trust me, it was in there.
So we spoke to him about how this World Cup and, you know, kind of what to look forward to. But let's start today with some USMNT convo. The USMNT have 4 years to become a real contender. And the first step is admitting that talent alone is not the problem. They need to change how this team is built, coached, and how they're held accountable. Here are 10 ways for the USMNT to win the 2030 World Cup.
This is the top topic.
Alexis, you're up first. What do you think?
I think it's very simple. 10 things. I only think we need to do 45. So the top 10, I would honestly say the first one is probably the most important. Arsene Wenger recently took a trip to U.S. soccer and they released a statement together, which is that they need to find a way to make youth development more equitable across everyone, not just those that can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to sound like Mamdani or nothing, but I do think everybody needs to be able to afford to play soccer. And that means probably make it free. So for me, let Arsene Wenger completely overhaul the system here. And we're seeing the quote, I felt people from a poor background had no real access to the game.
Yeah.
Wenger has not been here that long and he saw it. It's not fair. And we're seeing that. And like he says, football across the world, people of all levels, of all economic backgrounds get a chance to play. In fact, the majority of players come from poor backgrounds. Not to suggest that that makes you a better player or anything, but it's access to everybody. And I think that's what needs to change. We have 330 million people here. You know, we have like a high protein diet at a young age, which creates relatively athletic youngsters. And we see it in youth development, how American players stand out till right around the 16, 17 years old. And then all of a sudden it drops off a cliff. And the reason is they're not getting the right coaching. They're not getting access to the academies. And once that players around the world that have access to that level of coaching start to continue to develop, we stop because we're not just faster and taller than everybody else anymore.
Sure. I mean, we got all the GMOs that the Europeans don't.
Buddy, Monsanto is pumping us with all these drugs.
We're not using it to our best ability. All right. This is my first thought. Which has kind of already been in the news, but CONCACAF and CONMEBOL are talking about merging. For the sake of the U.S. men's national team, this would be a good idea for just getting the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. There's other countries in CONCACAF, but we're focusing on USMNT to play against better teams, better competition, tougher. We saw the final, the World Cup final between Spain and Argentina. You saw the it was the psychopaths at the end after they lost. But that kind of intensity and pressure, I think, could possibly make a real an opportunity for improvement for the U.S. And we're looking at top teams in CONCACAF and CONMEBOL merger. And
to run through it pretty quickly, though, it would mean combining these nations. So think about all the international tournaments we would play against each other. Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, United States, Uruguay, Ecuador, Canada, Paraguay, Panama, Venezuela, Chile, Peru, Costa Rica, and Honduras. I mean, that is a substantial group. And the reason why I like this idea so much, and in fact, that's my number two. the reason I like this idea so much is that it's probably the only way where we can compete with Europe.
Right.
If you look at the way Europe is structured at the moment, they get a chance to play against the top level because they're playing against each other. And there are those nations, the San Marinos, the Liechtensteins, the, you know, Estonia, that every once in a while come in there that aren't, soccer powerhouses or football powerhouses just yet. But they're working on it. Maybe Liechtenstein and San Marino don't get there because they're like tiny places. But when it comes to the U.S., a lot of, and speaking just about U.S., and Mexico and Canada probably agree, but a lot of the nations you're going to play aren't powerhouses, right? So the games tend to be a little bit tougher. They tend to be more going against the low block. You're not going to get that against your Brazils. And you know how we very rarely get a chance to play against Brazil. You're not going to get that against an Argentina, against an Uruguay, against a Colombia. We're going to be testing ourselves against the best that this entire hemisphere has to offer. So I think it's a tremendous idea. I don't see anything negative about it.
I mean, from a U.S. perspective and a competition perspective, I think it's beneficial. From the a bigger picture, more traditionalist kind of a thing, I don't think it's a great idea. I think it possibly.
Why is that?
I think it could possibly hurt some of the smaller nations in CONCACAF. CONMEBOL is a powerhouse. Whether you are Argentina or Bolivia or Venezuela, countries that, you know, a few that haven't made the World Cup, they are cut from a similar cloth. They've been in that situation, and they can and there's a higher standard kind of there but there's only what, eight? How many CONMEBOL nations are there? Eight?
Ten.
Okay. So it's less to sort of manage and work with. I think the logistics, the travel for, again, some of these smaller countries, I think it's going to cause a couple issues. So that's...
No change comes without a few hiccups. So I don't want to say it is what it is. But for me, I think, I hope that this merger, what they're talking about, and it feels like maybe the confederations will remain separate, but share and combine a few things. Because I think maybe for qualification, I can't imagine how it would work. It would be 12 altogether, right?
Right.
It would be six from each, right? So it would be 12 altogether. I don't know exactly how it would work. I think it would add a new wrinkle to the qualification for South America. Because right now Brazil plays Argentina three or four times in qualifying for a World Cup, which is kind of crazy. I mean,
two. In qualifiers, it's two.
Is it two?
I think they only play each other twice. Every single country plays each other twice.
Okay, so maybe it's... Okay, all right. Either way.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is this would certainly add a few wrinkles, so maybe that doesn't change. But what I'm looking at is, think about the positive this is for a league like MLS, a league like Liga MX, even a league like the Canadian Premier League, which is starting to get involved a little bit more in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Sure.
If now there is no more CONCACAF Champions Cup, if suddenly we're all a part of Copa Libertadores and the Sudamerica, that changes everything. It changes everything for MLS clubs. You're now going to have to go play Flamengo. You can't just play, you know, Seattle versus New York. You know what I mean? Like, you got to go and you've got to play some of the best in the world on this side of the country.
From the world. Business perspective, and I saw somebody talking about
I'm talking about just the footballing.
But this is also a factor. I can't remember who was talking about this, but the biggest issue CONCACAF has, and CONMEBOL realistically, is that they have a very difficult time competing with Champions League, right? So it's not just about who watches Champions League. It's also the players that want to play in Champions League. All the best players in the world want to play in UEFA Champions League.
I don't know that that's going to change.
I'm not saying that's going to change, but to compete with UEFA Champions League, we need a domestic competition that players want to play in. And so us getting better players, whether domestic or international, or domestic or foreign, that is going to be beneficial and allow us to compete from a domestic club level and an international domestic level as well.
I think it's probably the only chance we have here on this side of the world to compete with Champions League.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to do much to do that. I don't know that all of a sudden people are going to be like, man, I'd love to win Champions League, but I also... Maybe I should play for MLS because we got to play, you know, whatever.
Boca Juniors. Yeah, but Champions League wasn't always, you know, Champions League that we know and love today. How to get there?
But I mean, I think people will still consider that a more. But this takes us a step closer to it, and I think that's important.
Okay,
you know, the chance to play Boca or River or you know Peñarol, it's huge.
You sure? I mean,
you telling me some kid's not growing up being like, yo, I think I'd rather play in La Bombonera.
Yeah, but it's like Argentinian soccer is not dominant. You know what I mean?
No,
it's like
but
it's not the best quality
but
football.
At least there's a lure.
There is a lure. Yeah, yeah. But they've been around 100 years longer than the Colorado Rapids.
Right. No one knows. Like, I really want to play in BBVA Houston, wherever, Houston Dynamo so, Stadium.
Maybe at some point. Okay, let's move. You had the similar point.
Yeah, so I'm backing up. But although I don't see very many negatives. So,
okay.
But what's your number two?
My number two is investment in coaching at the youth levels, especially. So this is a... you know, you mentioned Arsene Wenger earlier, but I've seen Arsene Wenger, the way he speaks about the game, the way he talks about, you know, the example you just gave about like at a certain age, there's like if a player can't, you know, doesn't have the technical ability by 14, that there really almost is no chance that they will and things like that. But that kind of like harshness and cutthroat vision and eye for talent, like we just don't really have that here, right? But I mean, it is a different kind of philosophy. But I did see Norway. A bunch of aspects is like it's a little similar to us, but obviously football is a huge priority for the country. But they really encourage like multiple sports and athletes that are like. You know, have a lot of skills and you know, balance and coordination, and they can do that in other sports. So they encourage that at younger ages. But coaching, in particular, is just not. It's a strange aspect of like, especially as Americans, where there's a lot of competitions, a lot of competition in like in science and technology, and like almost every aspect of. American kind of innovation is always there. We're always trying to be the best at whatever. We're competing with other nations. That's a kind of, you know, a big kind of foundation of like what this country kind of is or what we were sort of taught. But something with soccer coaching is just like not really there. Like it's the profession is not super respected. It's just like, oh yeah, you do that. It's the dad that takes the job when none of the other parents want to be the coach for the kids team or the high school team or whatever. And that just simply is not the case. I mean, I remember when we went to Dortmund and we went to the training ground, and how serious was every coach that you came across? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a well respected profession. They walked around confidently. It wasn't just about like we're like, you know, PE coaches or whatever. It's like this is a real profession, and we're trying to build the next generation of footballers. And I think philosophy around coaching and soccer coaching is not really sort of there in the United States. And I just think that needs to improve. There needs to be investment. The one I had seen. So, speaking of Norway, this is another fascinating thing that we learned throughout the World Cup. They take the way they subsidize youth sports is they take a percentage of the lottery. So every time you buy a lottery ticket, you are investing in the youth soccer programs in Norway. Mm. So that's you mentioned you know, you don't want to be Mamdani, but what a great idea.
No,
right?
I would love to be mom dying.
Yeah. You don't want a salary, whatever.
Yeah.
But what a fantastic idea to look. Yes, you know, youth sports cost money, but the investment in you're investing in the future, right? You're investing in something in your community, in your society that will benefit people. Like, obviously,
let's get scratch offs for U.S. soccer, dog.
Spain winning the World Cup is how many millions of dollars? The federation makes like $300 million, $400 million, something like that. yeah, if you invested in something 10, 15 years ago in a child, and that is the payoff, that benefits everybody. That benefits the economy of the country. That benefits so many things.
So be more like Norway. I agree. I also think that the reason the coaching isn't as good is it's a symptom of the pay-to-play system, because coaches do get paid well to be a coach inside of an academy. And the reason you get to keep your job is because you win. You know, like, parents want to see the kids win because they think, I'm going to get a free college for the kid. Sure, out of this. Sure. So I want to see the kid win so that scouts come to these games and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you don't get plaudits for developing a good player. You get plaudits for picking the kids that are fastest and strongest at a young age, because that means you win. So you don't ever really develop a player. And I think my next point is probably going to be something that helps with that. So personally, I think if we started to do solidarity payments, that would change a lot of what I'm talking about. So we already talked about getting rid of pay for play. So now if you develop a good soccer player, someone that can go pro, every time that player is transferred to a new team and money is exchanged in that transfer, a part of that money is supposed to go, as per FIFA, to the academy that developed them.
Right.
Right now, the U.S. doesn't partake in that. MLS doesn't partake in that.
Well, the DeAndre Yedlin case changed something that was a fire, something, the academy.
I forget the academy, but DeAndre Yedlin's original academy sued to get solidarity payments.
Yes.
First transferred to Newcastle.
Right, right. And I actually don't know what the status of, like,
I think at the moment, solidarity payments are not mandatory.
They're not mandatory, but I think, like, if an MLS club, an academy sells on, the money does go, a solidarity payment does go to like, you know, RSL2 or something like that. I'm almost sure it does.
I'm not 100% sure on that. Okay. But what I will say is it's not a commonplace thing in the U.S.
Right,
there's
right,
a couple
right.
of FIFA things that the U.S. doesn't pay attention to. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a 20-team top flight. It's supposed to be promotion and relegation. The U.S. just doesn't pay attention to those things. It's allowed to do its own thing, as we saw a lot, too much of in the World Cup. But I think solidarity payments would change the course. So if children's parents weren't asked to pay for the opportunity to be a part of an academy, what the league would do is, or the academy, they would make money based on how well of a player they developed. So there would be more interest in getting the right coaches, not just, you know, a guy who used to coach the football team and doesn't anymore, that just has a whistle and a clipboard and decides he wants to do it. And again, I'm not saying that's every coach. There are some coaches that take it very serious. But when you look at the ways, speaking of Arsene Wenger, when he talks about, if you don't have footwork by this age, you're just never going to get it. We're talking about someone who's witnessed youth development for decades. He's already seen it. He already knows this is a well-seasoned individual. And he says, no, you have to know this by 12 or you're just never going to get it. We're currently not following a lot of that. Certainly not everywhere, right? High schools and schools, not everyone has that knowledge. It's usually a guy who's like, yeah, I know a little bit about soccer. I'll be the coach. So if that changes, I think that would change everything in this country. And I think solidarity payments would start to shift the focus away from every parent of a child needs to pay $15, $25, $3,500 a year to, you know what? Why don't we build great footballers, and then when they go, or great soccer players, and then when they go off in the league, we're going to get that money.
Yeah, I mean, that's it seems to work well for the rest of the world. It makes almost no sense why we do not do it. The only reason I can make sense of why we don't do it is because there's more money to be made from the parents than there is from solidarity payments.
Well, because Americans weren't turning pro at that level before.
Right. But sort of taking away that financial incentive for these academies, now it's like, well, why change it when we're making money? So that I could see why. Okay. My next thing is, I kind of already mentioned the pay-to-play stuff in Norway, so I'll just move on. But next thing, we need a goalkeeper. We need to find the next great American goalkeeper. This is now no shade on any of the goalkeepers that we have, but the fact that we're not in a situation where we don't know like who the exact goalkeeper is, like this back then. So just a couple years ago, Casey Keller, Brad Friedel,
Tim Howard. Casey Keller has long hair or hair. He has hair in this photo.
But we were in a situation where like any of these guys, they were all fighting for position. It was completely cutthroat. They were all like...
But it was Casey Keller we just saw there, Brad Guzan, Brad Friedel, and Tim Howard. You know what they all have in common? Bald men.
Bald men.
We need to bring back bald
these
men.
Guys with hair. You're not doing it for me, guys.
Chris Brady, you got a goatee and long hair. We can't have you, bro.
You need to just cut your hair. You need to be a non-bald, bald guy.
Matt Turner, buzz that head off.
You got beautiful hair. Sorry, we're going to miss it.
Bick it, though. You can't be our goalkeeper.
But this is I think the last few years, and even in the club situations for Matt Turner, and he thought he was going to Lyon, and that fell through, and not really working out in the Premier League and all this other stuff. How are we in this situation? What did these goalkeepers not do to pass down the information?
Yeah.
To the next generation to be like, oh, why aren't these guys goalkeeper? I mean, Friedel was a coach. Why aren't they building the next goalkeeper?
This used to be our strength. Yeah. We used to not be able to get
Miola. We've had legends that
we couldn't get players on the pitch that weren't goalkeepers in Europe, and now we can't get goalkeepers.
Now we have the techiest midfielders and attackers, and everybody's there playing in Champions League. Goalkeepers now. That's the fact that this has become a weakness for the U.S. men's national team is kind of nuts. I mean,
especially when all of our American sports use hand eye coordination. Assume. Is it too much Call of Duty? What are we doing now?
We got to change the question from what if our best athletes played soccer to what if our best athletes were goalkeepers, right?
All these people like LeBron would be, he better probably make a good goalkeeper actually.
He's looking for a next NBA team to join. You know what? Scrap all that.
Dog. You really want to go to Boston, dog? No, how about this? Go to Bruges.
We
need you in Bruges, dog.
We could use you out there. I think this is kind of crazy. It's crazy, and it also highlights, it's hard to say who you put the onus on and accountability on. Is it U.S. soccer specifically? Like, are they? It's not necessarily about them. They're not going to build the next great goalkeeper.
Actually, that's not true, right? Shouldn't U.S. soccer bring everything under its umbrella? Shouldn't it become a bit more unified, a bit more involved in that youth development than it already is? A youth development so splintered that U.S. soccer doesn't find out about them. Back when they had the ODP, they could take the best kids and put them in one thing. They don't do that anymore. So U.S. soccer needs to get everyone under the umbrella. And that brings me to my next point, which is why I'm glad you brought that up. We need to develop a very specific style of the way Americans play. I was looking at Spain. They used to have the tiki-taka. Now they're very much in the sort of De La Fuente era. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, they already know. Spain already knows we've got the midfield cover. We got midfielders pouring out of every
door. For the
next
12 years.
We're good with midfielders. Now we've got these two sort of incredible wingers. Maybe strikers, the one place where they've sort of struggled in the past to develop. And pretty much historically, although everyone really seems to be struggling with that at the moment. They already know they already know the base of the type of player they have, and they can build off that. The U.S. has never done that. What does the U.S. have as an advantage, right? When I look at Norway, I see a bunch of tall players. When I look at, Spain, I see a bunch of players that maybe don't have the height, but they're really good with the ball at their feet. They understand what they need to do. Why do we as a nation not have a style that we play? And I'm not necessarily saying it should be a formation. It should be a very specific, we're going to bunker down, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. It doesn't have to be that, but it's like, take a look at the type of player that we average out, that we tend to develop here. Very athletic. Very athletically gifted at a young age. Why are we not building around that? Why are not we building a system that plays to our advantages as America? I get the fact that America is so diverse. It's so big that someone who grows up on the West Coast is going to be very different than someone who grows up on the Southeast, very different than someone who grows up in Maine, very different than someone who grows up in Chicago. I get all that, but that's our advantage. We have basically all of Europe and their entire topography all in one country. How are we not deciding, players that come from the Southwest, they tend to play like this. Players that come from Chicago play like that. Players that come from New York play like this. And how do we not have a way where we can bring that together and use all that to our advantage? And if there's one thing that U.S. soccer, Mauricio Pochettino, his coaching team can do is figure out across the board, this is our best players. This is what we do better than everyone else. Even if it's tiny, then this is the way we're going to use that to our advantage. And the fact that we don't have that yet, and maybe we're developing it because we did see the U.S. play on the front foot a little bit in this tournament. Maybe we are developing it, but right now we don't have it. We should know what that is. And then that should trickle down to all the academies.
Sure. I mean, it sounds like a, you know, a sort of a director of soccer, Oguchi Onyewu.
Maybe oh, come on, he's Gooch.
Gooch.
First of all, everyone's going to listen to you. So, I'm so scared of you.
So maybe that's where it kind of starts. But this goes to my next point about the who should be the USMNT coach going forward.
Mm.
And I generally don't like a coach going for multiple cycles, but I don't think.
Can you explain that to me? Because I'm the opposite.
You like coaches for multiple cycles.
Give me someone there for a long time. Yeah.
Even if they are not really successful.
No. You got to be successful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're looking
but at, I also believe you need time.
But Mauricio Pochettino hired in 2024 and 17-2-12 record. He lost a fair amount of matches.
I mean, he didn't really get a lot of time.
No. But this is the thing here. I did like the performances in the World Cup outside of obviously the game against Belgium. And I think because he did not get a full first cycle, I would be okay with him getting being brought back and helping the team qualify for the World Cup. And I think when you talk about having a play style and philosophy for US soccer, having a manager of his caliber with the team for a long amount of time, and not just even just with the team, but working with the directors mm-hmm. at US Soccer and really trying to implement, like, hey, I came through Argentinian football as a child and went and became a player and played on the national team and then became a world-class head coach. This is how we did it there. This is some of the things I think you guys should implement. And I think that just more time within the program will help us develop a personality and play style. And so,
but you said you don't want them to be more than one cycle.
I said I generally do not like
generally.
It.
Generally, got it.
But I think because he did not have a qualifying cycle, we were hosting the World Cup, so he didn't have to go through that. And I think the pressure of having to qualify. And just getting that experience with those players, with the staff, with the front office of U.S. Soccer, I think that will benefit for the future of U.S. Soccer.
But let's say the next World Cup, Mauricio Pochettino leads the U.S. men's national team to, let's call it the third place game, right? So we lost in the semis.
Mm-hmm.
You would say that's it. Thank you. Job well done. Next coach?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna be mad if he stays, but I think
that's why I think you. I want to see progress. So as long as we're not, you know, if he got grouped, thank you, you're done. But if you know, progress is what I want. So if cycle after cycle, I'm seeing progress and I'm seeing better players coming on board and the system working.
And you saw progress.
Enough for him to stay.
Okay. Because yeah. You weren't very happy after the Belgium game.
We can't look at that and say we're suddenly a powerhouse. We're not.
No.
And I think my next point is going to make us powerhouse.
Okay. Here we go.
Are you
ready?
Last one. Okay. Are you ready? Can I get my ISO, please? Here we go. So I think the World Cup is a great system. And when I look at the world, I think, okay, this country goes out and develops these players. This country goes out and develops these players, and then we bring them together and we play. These players play at their own clubs, but you also play for a national team. And when I look at the United States of America, I see a country that's basically the size of the world. I see a country that has an incredibly large population that sometimes it's hard to find all the best players. In fact, a lot of players will say that some great players that they play with slip through the cracks. So here's a way to prevent that from happening and us to find all the best players we have in this nation. Instead of a World Cup, why aren't we doing a States Cup? Why doesn't every single state, all 50 states, go out and find the best 23, or we'll call it the best 11 players that they have from that state? Maybe it's not pros. Maybe we stop at U23s, but every single one, and we all jump into a big qualifying and whatever it is. The best 16 move on, right? We could split it all into groups that are regional, and the best 16 jump into a round of 16, and then we go from there, and someone will win the United States Cup.
It's everybody wants that trophy.
Think about it. It would be, we could do it every year. We could do it every 2 years. It would be similar to how AFCON does it across their mm-hmm. entire continent. We would be able to do it here. The kits would go fire. Tell me you wouldn't want the New York kit. Tell me you wouldn't want the New Jersey kit. You wouldn't want to see, what does the North Dakota kit look like?
Mm.
I want to see that. Alaska would have a fire kit. Hawaii. Think about all the learning how to play in all these different weather patterns. All of this would only create better players bars across the United States. We need a States Cup. Should I be the one in charge of it? Sure, I'll do it. Thank you for asking. Okay. But honestly, the kits would go crazy. People would be, it would build. You wouldn't have to do this at major stadiums. You could do it at small stadiums. But I think this would build a lot of interest in the sport in this country.
I don't hate the idea. I mean, it is a you know, somewhat of a logistical nightmare.
How? Give me an example.
Well, no. I mean, look, realistically, this has to be done like a World Cup, right? You have to qualify. You have to play like regional qualifiers, and then have the tournament in one location. That's the best way to do it. There's no.
Well, I mean, you would just go with the winner, right?
You go play where the winner. What do you mean?
Like, whoever is the home team for, like, whoever had the best, you know, record or whatever in the qualifying rounds. If they make it to the final, they get to host.
The logistics are not even necessarily like the playing the games. It is getting the players themselves to whatever location. Like, obviously these will most likely be teenagers or young adults. Like, getting them all together in like a one location. Who's coaching? Who is...
But the same thing U.S. soccer has, each state should have. So there should be a sporting director. New Jersey has a sporting director. New York has a sporting director. You know, Massachusetts has a sporting director. A director, yeah, of soccer, if you will. And they monitor the children that are from that state. They know who their best players are, and they're called into camp the same way they would be for U.S. soccer.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying that there's a lot of challenges to doing it. It's not easy.
I think the only challenge is, where are we going to put all this money?
Right. It also costs a lot of money to do this. You know, how are you?
Well,
I
learned from Norway, a couple scratch-offs and you're done.
Hey, so if that's the way to get it done, I mean, I think it's a fun idea.
There's major corporations in every state. This could be something that's, you know, sponsored by them. It's, you know, endowed upon because of some of these major corporations. They can wear that on the kits. Look, at the end of the day, I think it's an incredible idea. I don't know why we haven't done it, and I should be involved somehow.
Okay, that's it. You know, so obviously everybody else at U.S. Soccer doesn't know what they're doing, and they know who to hire.
They know some of the stuff they're doing, but this is clearly they let it slip.
So, okay, let us know what you think about our ideas, and if you have any others to help the U.S. men's national team win a World Cup in 2030. This is a couple little changes.
Yeah, we got some small things to do in the next 4 years. Put it in the comments if you got some better ideas.
Exactly.
Tyler Adams from the U.S. Men's National Team. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man?
Yes, sir. How are we doing?
Chilling, man. Yeah, look, we're recovering from the World Cup just like you were, maybe in a different way. You may be recovering physically and emotionally. Us, just
yeah, ours is more liver-based. But go ahead.
But first question, man, how are you reflecting on this World Cup in the United States? I mean, I saw you talk about it in post-match after the game against Belgium, but where are we at now?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't talked about it since then. So
okay.
I'm good, man. I think it's it takes time to process, I think, because you just build up a lot of emotion. Physically, you go through it, obviously, training for I don't know how many days it was. I think we were together for like 40 some odd days with the same people in an environment that's kind of enclosed. So I don't think people really see that side of it. And, you know, you get really close with the people that you're with every single day. So to see it come to an end and fall short, it sucks. But I think the positives that we can take away from it are that the team has definitely improved. The quality of players we have is definitely improving. It just takes time. It takes time, I think, to get over that hump. But I think we'll get there eventually.
I mean, I don't know. Prior to the Belgium game, though, the vibes were super high, especially after the Paraguay game. Everyone started to believing. I don't know if you saw the same thing in that camp. I know sometimes you can be put in a bubble, but it seemed like the whole world started to be like, yo, wait a minute. These American boys can play. And everybody seemed to love ranch dressing was a new thing. Everybody was going to Taco Bell. You know what I mean? Like Waffle House even got positive vibes and not just for fighting at 2 a.m. Did you guys notice that in camp? Did any of that bleed through? Did you see that the whole world really started to believe and kind of back America in this competition?
Yeah, I didn't read too much into everything. I felt like the one thing I learned from the last World Cup was kind of not to get too ahead of yourself. That being said, though, there was a belief in our team, without a doubt. Before the noise, before the first game, I think our performances just kind of solidified that belief within one another. And yeah, you're not going to lie. It feels good opening up a tournament like that. But it's about the consistency throughout the rest of the games and able to manage that throughout the rest of the tournament. So, again, I think that the support that we felt from within was incredible. I couldn't have imagined that, you know, going into SoFi, going into Seattle, whatever they call it now, Lumen Field or whatever it is, I would have felt that support. But the support everywhere we walked, everywhere we went, everywhere we played was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to see. I mean, you've spoken about in the past about how this U.S. men's national team for you is like the deepest bond that you've ever had with any team since you've been playing, you know, with these guys since you were a teenager. Is any one moment, whether it's this World Cup or past World Cups, that were off the pitch that made you realize and lock into like, man, I would run through a wall for my teammate?
Oh, man, we have too many moments like that. I don't know. One of the best moments for me was when Alex Freeman scored that goal against Australia, and you see everybody celebrating, because I think that just goes to show like how stoked we were for someone like Alex Freeman to score that goal. Everyone celebrating in the corner after the game, everybody singing Country Roads. That for me in my career is the number one moment. Like everyone walking around the field, like I never felt so American as in that moment. Like Maurizio coming out after the game saying like, you know, I felt American. I wish I was American in that moment. Like that's special. And I think that's what it's about. Like you want to be as relatable as a player in person as you can to like American people so that they just fall in love with the game as we have. So I think that was one of the moments where fans were just like, I can relate to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And dude, I mean, the vibes were so high. I don't know any country music. Even I was trying to learn the words to Country Road. You know, I was like, we need maybe, you know, I mean, a little Playboy Cardi might hip this up, but well, I was wrong. We're working on it. Maybe we need a remix or two, but the vibes were pretty high. And I know you guys can't control the decisions that are made outside of the football pitch, but government's getting involved and whatnot, red cards being rescinded. Did that have an effect at all on you guys?
I mean, again, I got asked about this after the Belgium game, or maybe it was the day before in the press conference, whatever, where people were like, did you find, like, we found out the same exact time as the media. I don't even know if Flo knew that, like, we were getting involved, like, people were trying to get involved and get it rescinded or whatever. So, again, we found out, I don't know, 20 hours before the Belgium game. Like, I don't know. Like, if it affected some people, great. It did not affect me by any means. I was preparing that someone else was probably going to play. I don't really know what else to say. Like, I had no idea what's happening.
Look, I mean, I don't want to pretend like, you know, even on our show, even between Alexis and I, we've been like different in like, I left that World Cup for the U.S. men's national team being like, there clearly was improvement. There were multiple victories in the group stages. There's winning the group. Alexis wasn't as happy with where we sort of are. I mean, after every World Cup, there's always the conversation about we go back to pay to play. We go back to why can't the U.S. men's national team do better at World Cups? But as far as the feeling of this group and the contribution to the sport and to the growth of the sport, how like are you all you guys feeling about that criticism and some of that praise?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, right? Like, you got to take it as it comes, so to speak. Like, for me, did we make it far enough? No. Like, of course, the goal in the tournament is to go further. Do you know what I mean? You're asking me as a competitor, like, I have the ambition to win things. Like, that's what I play to do. That being said, did the quality of our play improve compared to other tournaments? I mean, that's without a doubt. Do you know what I mean? Like when we were playing games, like when we were winning games, we were dominating. Do you know what I mean? Like we felt like we were in control of the games at all times. And then on the flip side, it's when you played against Belgium, I didn't feel like we were in control of the game. And that comes down to a player aspect, more people rising to the occasion of like, this is a knockout. This is what it feels like. Like we need to step up and you need to have a top performance or else you're out of the game. So, again, I think there's definitely some positives to take away from it. Negatives, there's always going to be negatives and things that you can improve on without a doubt. To dissect the whole pay to play and all the infrastructure and stuff like that, I mean, we could write a novel about it. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like that could take days. But for me as a player and the environment that I was in, I felt confident that we were prepared to go into the Belgium game. When we finished the game, I would have said, you know, otherwise. We lost 4-1, so it's not easy. I think when you go into big games and sometimes you make mistakes, sometimes the other team makes mistakes, whatever it is, like, that happens. But on the biggest stage, biggest moments, you know, we have to be better.
I want to ask you about your partnership with Allstate, but just before that, maybe you could give us very quickly, because I know we don't have a lot of time with you, just how do you feel about the job Mauricio Pochettino did inspiring you guys? It seemed like a corner was turned. You mentioned, the team playing better. I don't think I've ever seen the U.S. men's national team play on the front foot as much as you guys did, and that left me very inspired. I hate the way we went out, and I think we could have beat Belgium, so, there's a lot of left on the table, which I don't love, but talk about the job Mauricio Pochettino did, and then maybe you could end that with the partnership you have coming up with Allstate.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you just said. Like, us playing on the front foot, that's the way that Maurizio likes to play. And we have the players to do that, and we have the players to dominate that way. Like, athletically, we're superior. Like, we have a lot of good athletes on the team with technical ability. And I thought you saw that in the games that we dominated. That's how we played. We were aggressive. We weren't thinking about what could happen if they get in behind or whatever. We weren't even giving them the opportunity to think about that. And I think that's the mentality that we needed to have. And I think that's the mentality he instilled in us. So structurally, tactically, I felt like we were really sound. And I think the preparation games going into the World Cup were vital for us. I think against Senegal and Germany, we played two of our better games throughout that cycle, and that gave us confidence going into the opener. So, that felt really good. And then, on the partnership with Allstate, this is now my third mini pitch, I think, in the lead up to the World Cup. I know this was completed before the World Cup. Now we're announcing it after the World Cup. But it's been amazing. This is something that I wanted to do in partner with them, who had the same ambition to just kind of give back to these underserved communities, get people loving the game the way we love the game. I live in England. Obviously, there's soccer fields all around. You see kids playing on them 24/7. And you want to add that to the U.S. identity, the U.S. DNA. So it's great that kids will grow up hopefully playing some more street soccer, and falling in love with the game.
And just to close it out, I mean, your parts in the HBO documentary, The U.S. Against the World, and your story just about just growing up with the game, your family, everything. And I mean, it really just shows how much you care and want to give back and want young kids to have the same opportunities that you did. So, just a big applause to yourself, man. You're doing a lot of work behind the scenes, brother.
The pride of Wappingers Falls, man.
Let's go.
Hey,
Tyler Adams, thank you so much, man.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
A lot of transfers this summer. Big, big names moving from one club to another. And wait till you see the last one, because I think you're going to be surprised, because they're one of the biggest clubs in the world and they're getting all their players practically for free. What the hell's going on? Why don't we start with Morgan Rogers, who was a name linked to my favorite club, Arsenal, but he goes to Chelsea for £117 million.
I don't want to be pocket watching and all this stuff, but where the hell does Chelsea get the nerve?
Why isn't it Cooligans brought to you by Blue Co? Why are they not a sponsor on the show if you got that kind of money?
Ever since Boehly took over Chelsea, mm-hmm. and everybody sort of was worried about the club. They ended up winning Club World Cup, and they obviously had some very good moments. But generally, I'm like, every single signing seems like financial irresponsibility, financial recklessness.
It just feels like whoever Arsenal wants, they'll be willing to pay 20% more. I mean, you're looking here, 14 goals, 12 assists, and 78 chances created. He's a very good player, and you saw him shine in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Great cross for Anthony Gordon's goal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible player. Is he worth £117 million pounds, which is what, like 150, 160 in dollars?
It's very much a, Chelsea pay a tax so that you don't get him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So that somebody else doesn't get him. Because every single
their
time.
Their scouting is just looking at Fabrizio Romano's thing, like, who's Arsenal trying to buy?
And I do think there's football's always sort of been like this, where players are going to go for, the money. Like, Eze would have gone to Tottenham if Arsenal didn't come, didn't come calling. But
actually, it was the other way around. He called Arsenal. But anyway, go ahead.
But there's something to be said about, like, I think at some point there is just, they put a dollar amount in front of you. And you're like, okay, I maybe Arsenal would be cool. Maybe we could go, you know, help them win another Premier League title, maybe Champions League. But I cannot ignore this kind of money. But it also does seem to come with the little bit of the chaos that is Chelsea. They have a lot of money, but the money doesn't solve their problems. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm like, every single time they're signing another kid, another young player, I'm like, the money must be so good that you don't even care. You're not looking at the news. You're not seeing anything. You're not asking even players that play there, yo, what is it like to play? They're like, no. The money, I'll learn everybody's name when I get there.
Yeah, he actually said in the video, he said, I wanted to join the biggest club in London. Which is like, you mean the biggest pocket. You got that money, you're going to spend it.
I'm a huge fan of this bank, I mean club.
Hey, the check clear. I mean the shirt.
The shirt.
They didn't have a shirt sponsor yet. They might have to make it Morgan Rogers. Morgan Rogers might have to be on the front of that shirt.
We're looking at incredible. Morgan Rogers' career timeline. Look, he joined Man City in 2019, left for Middlesbrough in 23, Villa in 24. And
was Middlesbrough in the championship, by the way.
Which I think they didn't. No, they haven't gotten. They haven't been to the Premier League in a couple of years.
No, it's been a while.
But they're usually in like the relegation. Not the promotion playoff like that. So maybe
Michael Carrick was their manager not too long ago. So I think he's
been fantastic at Aston Villa.
He has. But you know, this is a big, you're 117. You're asking him to be the leader of the team now.
Yeah.
To carry a team. It's a little different than being like, hey, we found this. He was playing non-league like 5-6 years ago, something crazy like that. And now look at him. Absolutely. If I remember correctly, he was the one who was playing non-league.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk a little bit about Anthony Gordon of Barcelona? That is £60 million.
Mm-hmm.
By a team that got no money. Barcelona is still selling their digital future.
Well, yeah, especially with the Marcus Rashford situation is what was more baffling.
Sorry, we can't afford you. Anyway, here's £60 million for Anthony Gordon.
Anthony Gordon is a pretty good player. I mean, it's like sometimes I think because I was watching him at Everton for so long and I'm like, he's good. I just didn't think the Barcelona was ever in his future. He never seemed to me like that good of a player.
He doesn't scream to me Barca player.
Right, right.
I don't know. Maybe it's just my bias when I see an English person. I don't think Barca player.
But my guy speaks Spanish pretty well. We saw him doing the press conferences and speaking in Spanish. He said he was learning Spanish from when he was young, and then especially when he was at Newcastle speaking to the physios and his Spanish is like pretty good. So clearly this is like something he like manifested. He's like, I know I'm going to be a Barca player one day, so I'm going to learn Spanish now so I can get ready. And then it all happened. The footballing stuff came later, right?
Isn't it crazy? He was on Everton.
It's not crazy.
It is crazy.
It's not crazy.
Think about some of the biggest names that have come through your club, like Carlo Ancelotti managed there. You just forget about it because it's Everton. You know?
No.
Am I the only one?
Papa, big club, dog. All right.
Am I the only one, dog? Thank you. It's just crazy. We're like, man, what did you do in a past life that punished you that made you go to Everton?
You can go there.
You know what?
What
are you paying?
If
off?
We did a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but 6 degrees of Everton. A lot of players are connected to Everton. So John Stone, we just had this World Cup.
Yeah,
but at Man City, he's been. Everton, structurally, the foundation of the club has a lot of issues, but the players themselves are pretty good and they end up in way better situations.
Why do they? You're like a toxic ex. They always do better after they leave
that's
you.
We're like a first ex, like the first love, bro, that you're like, man, that... We weren't perfect.
How many times be there?
I miss her, dog.
Damn.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about someone that Manchester United fans might not miss too much. Casemiro.
Yeah.
He is going to Inter Miami after the, you know, LA Galaxy sued everybody. He's going to Inter Miami on a free.
Yeah. So we were hearing about this before the World Cup. And after Inter Miami, obviously, Sergio Busquets retired. Casemiro, I mean,
look, five times Champions League winner with Real Madrid, bro.
Dude, I mean, he did his thing. We watched him, you know, at the World Cup. We saw them lose against Norway. But my man is, historically, just a strong player. I mean, he's always done his thing and been kind of a focal point, especially in at Real Madrid. And it should be an exciting thing. I think when during the Amorim era, everybody was like, you're done. But it's just what Carragher had the famous, like, you leave the football before the football leaves you. Yeah. And they were cooking this dude.
Yeah.
And then he ended up being the reason they ended up in the Champions League spot. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, he really, like, you sort of immediately realize, oh, the issues are not with Casemiro. Like, there's other issues with the tactics and everything else. So I'm excited to see him at Inter Miami, and we'll be able to get to see him play regularly here stateside. I don't really have any doubts that he'll like adapt quickly, but you did mention the LA Galaxy thing. There is current. We don't know. It all seems like it's going forward, but mm-hmm. we don't know that LA Galaxy brought up an issue with MLS because they're saying that they broke the discovery right rules by, I think, contacting Casemiro.
There's a term for it where like you're
tampering.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. The discovery rights thing is stupid.
It is stupid, but we know why it happens, and it's because MLS, they don't want clubs competing with each other to inflate the value of a player's price.
This is the largest butt. This feels like the first time I saw a Cardi B video. Inter Miami has signed Brazilian midfielder Casemiro, but the league has opened an investigation over tampering charges. In the process, LA Galaxy had Casemiro's discovery rights. MLS is now looking into if the team broke the rules. This is a stupid rule.
This is a stupid rule.
Here's what the discovery rights thing should be gone. This is what makes us so frustrated about MLS, okay? The discovery rights thing should be gone. If you already have a player on your discovery rights, you get $200,000 in GAM or whatever. You mean the club that signs the player?
Right.
Well, how dare you be like, oh, Casemiro, you want to come play with Messi? I'm sorry, because there's a list that sometime many years ago, the LA Galaxy put your name on the list.
We know why it exists. I'm not saying it's right, but it is.
Please, MLS, for the love of God, stop doing these things.
the issue, well, again, it puts they don't want the clubs competing each other to then so that the players can leverage MLS clubs against each other to increase their wages or increase a transfer fee or whatever.
If the owner wants to spend, let them spend.
I agree. But I do think in some case, you will be able to attract bigger players.
These are broke boy activities. I don't want this in my league.
Okay, let's move on.
What are we talking about? Yuri Tielemans.
Yes.
He is going to Manchester United for £35 million.
You skipped Robert Lewandowski.
Okay, sorry. Why don't we do another MLS player who I don't know who had his discovery rights, but why don't we talk about Robert Lewandowski is going to Chicago Fire on a free, which is a pretty good thing to get. He did one of the purest nines of all time.
Lewandowski didn't play yesterday, right? I'm almost sure he didn't. He was please confirm. I don't think he did, because I didn't see anything. This is an interesting situation with because they have had Hugo Kuipers who was
he played. Yeah,
okay, so he did.
I don't think he scored, but he played.
So, Lewandowski, you know, goes in to replace Hugo Kuipers, who is, I believe, leading in goals in Major League Soccer. So it's a kind of a crazy situation where you have this, a great striker that is proven, and then he ends up going to Monterrey. I think they're in the middle of moving Hugo Kuipers, but it. On paper, kind of seems like a very bad idea, right? Like you have a good striker. You don't even really need Robert Lewandowski. But this is why I support it, and I'm excited.
You kind of don't need Robert Lewandowski
when you have the leading goal scorer in Major League Soccer,
and you add Robert Lewandowski. If you were able to keep Kuipers and Lewandowski, you're doing pretty good. Lewandowski is also Polish. There's a huge Polish population,
but that's the reason why I think it's a great idea. Because from a business perspective, I think it's next year or in 2 years, the Fire will have their new stadium in Chicago. This is fantastic.
This is huge.
A huge Polish community there. Like sort of do your thing. I feel bad for Hugo Kuipers, because he did he played politics correctly. He said all the right things. He's like, oh, he gave up his number. He said like, oh, Rob Lewandowski is a legend. Would love, honored to play with him and blah, blah, blah.
But well, maybe in next club.
But realistically, it's like, how could you not be kind of offended that you when you're the leading goal scorer and they go find another striker, even if it's Robert Lewandowski. Like if you're not a real, you're not a true competitor. If you're like, oh, you know, oh, I'm cool with him taking my spot. He's going to take your minutes. You know, they don't play with two strikers.
He's still, you got to say like, it's all for the team. It's all for the club. I understand. When he's like, this man is going to take my buckets.
I hope it works out for the Fire because I'm a huge fan of Robert Lewandowski. Okay.
Let's talk about Manchester United. They went out and paid £35 million for Yuri Tielemans.
Yes.
Which, look, Yuri Tielemans is a great midfielder. And if Michael Carrick wants you, that probably means, you know, from one great midfielder to another, Yuri Tielemans has a lot of experience. He's been around the league.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't feel like a Manchester United signing, though.
What does a Manchester United signing not feel this. Like?
I not don't know. This. For me,
I mean, he's old. How old is Tielemans? He's almost 29. He's an older guy. So it's like, it reminds me of the Christian Eriksen signing a couple years ago.
Yeah.
You bring in more of a veteran, but this guy's a proven Premier League midfielder. And my dude has a cannon from outside the box. He
checks all the boxes for a great midfielder.
After, but, you know, they announced signing the Premier League on Instagram, they posted Yuri Tielemans' highlight reel. And I was literally just waiting for the one. He scored a rocket on Jordan Pickford against Everton. And it's just like, I think every club has a memory of Yuri Tielemans scoring.
Oh, yeah, no, he's a great player.
And it's always just
but like, I don't know, I just felt like maybe Manchester United would be going younger, would be going, you know, building a future superstar versus just
maybe
sort of grabbing one from another
didn't
team.
Didn't pay a ton of money, but you would imagine having the depth they do have.
$35 million is a great.
That's a great deal.
That's good value for Yuri Tielemans.
For Tielemans. So.
Well, actually, at 29, I was for some reason, I was under the impression he was on the other side of 30. Maybe that's actually not a bad deal. Even if you get two good years out of him, there was a conversation. There was an interview I was watching with someone who like sort of consults for sporting directors at clubs. And they said, if you sign a player for more than £20 million or at £20 million, what do you consider a success? If you ask a fan, they would probably say like, they have to win this. They have to do this. They have to do that. But he said, can you get 20 starts out of them in the Premier League? If you get 20 starts out of someone in the Premier League, that is $20 million worth of...
$1 million a start.
Bro, I will... You have no idea. Give me £20,000. I think I can last 15 minutes in a game.
Okay.
I'll need that money for the bank, for the hospital, I mean. But I honestly believe Yuri Tielemans, you're going to get more than $35 million value out of him. Just
I think
for some reason, not the name I think of when I think of Manchester United. But
my only concern is like how the Yuri Tielemans sort of needs the ball a little bit. Like he controls the game a little bit. I wonder, Bruno, Yuri, how do they like that chemistry? That's literally my only concern.
That would
be
interesting.
We'll see how that.
Well, how do you feel about Sandro Tonali to Tottenham for £92 million?
You know what? It's a good bet.
Hey, holy Lord.
So this is a, again, a strong midfielder. And we saw what he did at Newcastle. We saw what he did. He came from Why can't I remember?
AC Milan.
Yes. Okay. So
a little bit of a gambling problem.
the gambling issue was obviously he missed a year of football because of it or whatever. So it's definitely a stain on his reputation. But
tremendous midfielder.
Yeah, just
tremendous defensive midfielder, or at least someone who could sit a little bit further back.
Also a cannon for a boot on him, man.
Makes the right pass.
I think
all the time.
I think this is a bigger deal for Tottenham. I think just to spend that kind of money, which we know they like historically do not do. And then just to have a strong, stable presence. Like Tottenham cannot be in the same situation that they were in the last 2 years. Like it's literally fighting relegation. It's like insane to have the resources that you do and be in the situation. And they just need a calming presence. And I think that's what Sajo Tonali will provide.
Settle the and I think, I think De Zerbi is going to get a lot out of him. I think the way De Zerbi plays and Sandro Tonali is a match made in heaven. Both very passionate as well.
Okay.
Why don't we do a couple rumors. Atlanta United, not a name that I thought we were going to say in this thing. They're rumored to get two different strikers. Mbolo from Switzerland. Darwin Nunez.
Both. One more exciting, but this if... if this Mbolo, we saw him during the World Cup. Obviously, he got the second yellow and got sent off for diving, and VAR intervened and was very embarrassing. But 15 million for an MLS team, yes, that is a lot. But I think this is
That's actually right around the value that Atlanta United has paid.
Yeah.
But the Darwin Nunez one here is interesting. The fact that he's only 27 years old is kind of crazy. But he's thinking of leaving Al Hilal. Yeah. But he's going to Atlanta. So it's all going to work out.
I think if, weirdly enough, I think Mbolo is the better player.
Yeah.
Let me finish my sentence. I think Mbolo is the better player. But weirdly enough, for Atlanta United, I think Darwin Nunez would be the better fit.
How?
He's obviously, he's Uruguayan. Coach is Argentinian. I think the environment, I think.
You're just like the boludo of it.
The boludo. There'll be exponential boludos.
Oh, che, boludo.
Look, this is just a complete shot in the dark, just kind of my guess. But I think Tata Martino would be able to harness this talent that Darwin Nunez has. Him playing with Almiron, I think it would work.
I don't disagree.
Vibes feeling, but I think Mbolo, without a doubt, is the better player and would be a better fit on most teams.
I think even if only one of these come, I think at the end of the day, the fact that Atlanta United is sort of back.
We were just in Atlanta, and they're starving for some level of competence and success.
2018 was too long ago.
Shout out to the homie Jay Riddle. He had highlighted this, but Atlanta United, they posted a highlight. They just signed a player. They signed a center back. They posted a highlight reel of all his best plays, and Atlanta United posted a highlight reel of the guy's teammate. It wasn't him. It wasn't the guy they signed. They posted a highlight reel of some other person.
Damn.
And it's just like, bro, that's crazy.
Bro, what happened to Atlanta United?
You can't.
Yo, check out his boy.
How are you in this situation? It's unbelievable that never like, and you would imagine it's like maybe the social media people or somebody, the video team, and they're like, but you look at the guy. Just look at the guy's face. What a ridiculous situation. Crazy.
All right, why don't we do this? Why don't we talk about some brighter news for the U.S. men's national team? Because you're looking at it here. Middlesbrough is set to sign U.S. men's national team midfielder Sebastian Berhalter.
Incredible.
The fee is around $2 million, which is not great. But he was going to be leaving for free in 5 months anyway. So at the end of the day, I think this is huge. And we talked a little bit about what is the attention that Sebastian Berhalter garnered through the Mauricio Pochettino era. And I think at the end of the day, I said, this is someone who's going to get some interest from Europe. And I think Middlesbrough is a great place for him to land. I think it's a great place for him to sort of develop without having to sort of try to input yourself at the highest, highest level.
And he will play alongside his former teammate at Columbus Crew, Aiden Morris.
Yeah.
So that should be good. I watched the promotion playoff that Middlesbrough lost. And they were in it because they had who they lose to, and then they were found to the Spygate thing.
Southampton.
So it was kind of a weird scenario. They ended up losing anyway. But I thought watching that one game, I haven't seen too much of Middlesbrough last season, but watching that one game, there was just like no ideas. They were just like, I mean, this is an opportunity to get to the Premier League, and they couldn't
get it over the line.
They couldn't, Aiden Morris had like, I think 95% possession in that game. There was just like no ideas. They just said they had the ball and it was they're playing against Hull, and they just like, you have the ball. We know you're not going to be able to do
anything. I remember watching the end of that game being like, man, this is really depressing.
So I think having a player like Sebastian Berhalter, even just on corners and free kicks, and you know, he scored against Turkey at the World Cup. He scored against Germany. Did he score against Germany in the friendly? Recall. I don't remember.
But those sweet, sweet corners are going to Middlesbrough.
The corner kicks are lethal, bro.
Sweet, sweet corners.
And he has a, I think his time.
sweet, delectable corners.
But I think his time with playing alongside Thomas Muller has changed him a little bit. There's a maturity.
He's become a little bit of a leader on the pitch.
Confidence. Yeah. That is like just so awesome to see.
All right, so this is what I sort of teased early on. There's two major clubs, right? But let's talk about Manchester City first, and then we'll get to the next one. Manchester City, this is their ins and outs, right? Because they're going through a major transition now with Pep Guardiola leaving, Enzo Maresca coming in. Let's take a look at some of the signings that they've brought in and some of the players that they've sent away. So here, incoming, Elliot Anderson, Matheus Detrobert, whatever, the Torbit, and Jeremy Mhonga. These are some, you know, big names. Elliot Anderson in particular is pretty valuable. I forget what the transfer. 115. I thought we were going to put that in the rundown. £115 million. So just under what Chelsea was willing to pay for Morgan Rodgers. Matheus Detrobert comes from Troyes, very, very good player. And obviously Jeremy Mhonga was a player that a lot of people wanted off of Leicester. These are the players that are going out, though. And I don't know if you noticed the difference in the names. Bernardo Silva, John Stones, and Nathan Ake. These are players that have won. They've won Champions League.
Older?
A little bit older. Nathan Ake is not that old. But,
yes, he is. I think he's 30.
Yeah, but he's not that old. John Stones is pretty old. John Stones, what, 33, 34?
John Stones, I think, is younger than Nathan Ake. I could be wrong, but we'll...
No, that's... damn, bro. Stop drinking, bro. Bernardo Silva, obviously, also up there. But John...
Bern- 32, Ake's 31.
There you go. What are the... Ha-ha.
1 year. Okay.
I was right. That's all that matters.
A couple months.
The guy's like 39 years old. But Nathan Ake's 7. Bernardo Silva is going to Real Madrid on a free. John Stones, I believe, is just a free agent. I don't think he has another club that he's going to.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he's currently without club. And Nathan Ake, I believe, is also a free agent, but I heard rumors that he was going to the Turkish league, if I'm not mistaken.
Fenerbahce.
Boom, Fenerbahce player. So, you know, these are winners that are leaving. And incoming, you got Elian Anderson, who I think we could all agree is a great player. Is he worth 115? We'll see. Jeremy Mhonga and Detrobert, who I think we're left to find out whether he would be much of a starter. Interesting. Not your typical. I mean, they did a lot of business in January as well, bringing in Gehi and Cherki, and Semenyo as well. I think he came in, right? Yeah. Still not the type of names you would associate generally with a Manchester City, and it leaves me wondering. Like, I wonder if how's Erling Haaland feeling about where the project is right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, the margins for success are really small, right? I mean, they weren't that far back and finishing in second place. They ended up winning two trophies. They didn't have a bad season by any means, but by Manchester City standards, they want to win the title and they want to win Champions League, like every competition that they're in. I wonder, I don't think these, I'm almost like, even like Bernardo Silva, I understand him leaving. He's like older, but going to Real Madrid is like so weird. And like, it just seems like Bernardo Silva is not the same Bernardo Silva we saw 5 years ago. So I just wonder if he settles in. Like,
It worked out with Luka. Madrid, we had an old guy in the midfield and it worked out fine. Let's bring this
guy.
So
these players, I think, outside of, so Stones, I think Everton were interested in probably bringing him back, and I heard
he's free.
Maybe
a little bit more than Everton can pay, but
I don't think he will. He'll do that.
you didn't hear what I said.
Yes, Everton are poor. I guess I don't know what you mean, but sure, they sign players.
They are signing players.
But the injuries are kind of sort of my only concern. Ake and Stones have missed a fair amount of time just due to injury. So fitness is kind of the only thing I kind of think about. And I think that's probably one of the factors as to why they are, City's letting them go. But we won't know until, Manchester City play a few games and what they're like under Enzo Maresca. For the last decade, we haven't seen a Manchester City without Pep Guardiola. So it's going to be that adjustment where I'm curious to see what it's going to look like.
I wonder, and I also wonder what Real Madrid with Bernardo Silva, but also Jose Mourinho are going to look like. Let's take a look at some of these surprising incoming players, because two of these were completely on a free. And I feel like Real Madrid is the only club in the world that can consistently pull something like this off, where they just seem to be getting some of the best players in the world for free. Let's take a look here. Bernardo Silva, Denzel Dumfries, and Mark Cucurella. They did pay for Cucurella. He was £55 million, if I'm not mistaken. Dumfries is 20 million. But Bernardo Silva's free, and also not listed here is Ibrahim Konate. Konate on a free as well. These are top level players. These aren't run of the mill. These are players that could do
outside of Silva, but young, athletic. Yeah,
but they could do a shift for Real Madrid. Even if you're not starting for Denzel Dumfries, that's a great player to bring in off the bench.
Yeah. I mean, look, the main focus here, obviously, for Real Madrid is to win anything, right? I mean, your player scoring a lot in Mbappe, and like from an attacking perspective, like that doesn't seem to be much of an issue, but their defending there has been kind of abysmal, especially against the top rival in Barcelona. And Barcelona has like it figured out in kind of every position, and it sort of goes like just a reminder of where these two clubs are when it comes to their philosophies. Like the Barcelona will, you know, homegrowns and you know, young players that come up through the academy and they build up, and Real Madrid is not that. They're like, we will throw money at the problem, and we will bring in the best players that we can, and we'll see if it works this time around. They just the last 2 years, it has not, and you know, Barcelona has kind of humiliated them, whether they're playing against them or not. They just dominating La Liga, and it's looking crazy because it is a club with, you know, basically. Every diamond watch chains and everything, and then it's like, then you know, their home is it's Red Man's house. You know what I mean?
From Cribs?
From the MTV Crib.
Damn, shouts to Red Man. I just think, you know, when Real Madrid is one of those clubs where, like, if you get picked for their academy, it must be like, hey, if you work hard, you could play for Getafe. You know what I mean?
yeah.
You ain't never getting on Real Madrid, buddy.
There's a Dominican kid that's on Real Madrid that's never played. I need to represent the national team. It's just not a...
just remind me, whatever happened to Kevin Paredes, bro?
He just went to FC Utrecht.
Did he?
Yeah. Brush. He left Wolfsburg. Happy for him. Yeah. I mean, he's been dealing with a lot of injuries. So hopefully he gets better there.
Couple grown pains. Shout out to a young Dominican from the U.S.
Exactly. So, I mean, look, the transfers have been fun, but every summer, we also, not only are there a lot of transfers.
What are we transferring into our closets?
Exactly.
Bro?
Because we get a lot of new kits that come out, new jerseys, new shirts. It's always a lot of fun. All the European teams come up with a lot of fun things. So let's take a look at some of our best and worst kits that we've seen so far. So I don't even know what we're starting with. Are we just going to put one on screen? Let's see. Okay. All right. AC Milan. Has their new kit. This is, what is it? What are we looking at? Like wings?
It's sort of like, it's an Athens inspired, if I remember correctly, because they won Champions League in Athens.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. It's very marbly in the background.
Right. And that's kind of what the shirt kind of reminds you of, like just like a marble sculpture of some kind.
Yeah.
But always.
Puma Cook with this one, though. It's a nice one.
AC Milan always has the iconic black and red trim, especially in their home kits. So it's just, I mean, it's iconic. So yeah. I love it. All right. What do we got next? Ajax. History lives in every detail. Yeah. Introducing our new away kit.
Show us the details.
I would love to see.
Why are you hiding it from us?
I'm imagining it right now, but I would love to see the image, okay?
And you know what? Make it up in your own mind, they said. All right, here we go. Ooh, look at this Ajax kit.
Remember Ajax did the like a Jamaica kit or Bob Marley kit?
The Bob Marley kit.
And it kind of reminds you, it kind of looks a little bit like that, but without the red, green, and
there's
black.
There's like a slight pinkish hue inside of a black kit, which is giving a little Columbus Crew, a little Inter Miami mixture.
I'm into it.
Columbus Miami. Is there a Miami in Ohio?
There is a Miami
in Ohio, bro. This is Miami in Ohio right here, dog. This is what a boring place. I think.
The better Miami, people would say.
Sure, the other Miami. Okay. But it's nice. Ajax doesn't really miss with their kits. So this is another example of one that a lot of people who don't even watch the Eredivisie are going to wear.
Okay. All right. This might be my favorite.
The Real Madrid kit.
I am not a Real Madrid fan by any means, but this kit is fire. I mean, I love.
You know what I love about it is that every once in a while they drop a little purplish, pinkish.
They just throw in a little color, a little detail that is. I mean, and it's kind of a pinkish purple the Adidas stripes are like pinkish purple, and then the trim on the shirt is also like a Portland Timbers green, and just the colors go well together. And then we got Vinicius's new chin.
Is it back
and
there?
Everything.
It no, just, Vinny's not even there. It's just his new chin.
It's just the
did
chin.
Did he actually get this? Is this AI?
It is real.
How did he heal so quickly?
So it's called chin harmonization surgery. That's what it's called. I guess they do that out in Brazil. It's something to align your chin with your mouth and nose. And I read this whole thing about it. I mean,
How did he heal up so quickly?
So I don't think it's like that invasive of a surgery. I think it's like it's either like a small implant or some sort of like injection or something like that. I don't know if it's like permanent. I don't know how it all works. But I gotta give him credit. I mean,
let's see.
He looks different.
The best and worst faces, new faces.
But I mean, if that's what he wanted to do, what are you gonna do? Okay.
Okay. What do you think of this Arsenal away kit, Gunners? I think it needs to be in my closet ASAP. It is the dark blue. There's hints of the bruised banana in the background. If you could see it,
yes, I
do. You could probably see it a little bit clearer on Bukayo Saka's shirt here. It's dark blue with slightly lighter dark blue inserts, and then the shoulder, the stripes is yellow and red. This is absolutely beautiful. Don't love the shirt, the sleeve sponsor, but I absolutely love. This kid. I mean,
this looks like a
Adidas and Arsenal is a what a match made in heaven. They do not miss.
Yeah,
bro.
This looks a little bit like it gives me like school uniform vibes, but like, but I like it.
Where did you go to school?
It just looks so like I don't know proper. Like it's just like a school. Like the blue especially has you know it's like school uniforms out in England.
I don't think so. But what I do love is that the cannon is once again just instead of the full badge, it's just a cannon.
Okay,
which I absolutely love.
All right, what else do we got?
What else we got?
Come on, bad. All right, these are bad kids. Or these are not the least favorite. All right, so okay, let's see.
This, by the way, production picked this. I actually think this is awesome. This is the new Bournemouth kit.
I don't love the sponsor. It really ruins the...
No, actually, this kind of gives me like old school vibes. This gives me a little retro.
Kick me right here in the bullseye.
Well, if it was in the middle of the shorts, I'd be worried. But okay, Vitality is the shirt sponsor. That's also the stadium sponsor for Bournemouth. So, yeah. Of course, they're going to stay with them. I don't hate this. I like that the stripe goes around it as well. It's not... You could clearly tell the shirt was designed... With this in mind,
it's a very traditional board. I like that. Yeah, it does the black trim around the logo. Like you know, it almost like it like the logo is part of the shirt, as opposed to it being slapped.
I love
on
this,
there.
And also I love that it seems like it's done in a pub. And I know pubs in England are all struggling. They're all going away. So this is pretty cool.
Does Scottish drink all the beer there too?
Damn. Wow, son. is Flamengo. Rangers.
Rangers with okay, this is a bold move, I think, for Rangers. You don't really kind of expect this. It looks like sort of chain link fence, but then there's a lot going on here.
I don't associate this look at all with Rangers.
Right. So say also red.
That's what I'm talking about. Red and black. It's very Flamengo. It's very AC Milan.
Yeah.
It's not Rangers, which is my attempt.
I mean, it's
Scottish
a third
accent.
Kit, so they're going to go a little bit.
It should be
crazier.
Your 17th kit.
Okay, what's going on here?
Oh, my God. I want this right now. Portofino Football Club in the ninth tier. This looks like a grandpa's vacation polo shirt. It is a scene of Portofino across the front. I love this shirt.
This is definitely an Alexis piece of clothing.
100%.
This is not something I would wear. This is
shockingly would look better on you, but I'm still going to be the one to wear it. This is incredible.
I don't hate it, but it doesn't scream this is a football shirt at all. I mean, this is like you wear this like in the photo, like you wear this. This is like an annoying shirt that like you would wear on a cruise.
That's what I mean. It's like a divorced dad vacation shirt.
Right, right.
But it looks amazing and I kind of want one. And it's apparently available from Classic Shirts. So look out for me, Classic Football Shirts. I will be ordering this in what I assume will have to be a 7XL.
Is Classic Shirts Classic Football Shirts?
Yes. Yeah.
It's the same, that's the account?
I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm almost sure it is. Don't they have Classic Football Shirts as their account?
Apparently not. But I don't know what brand makes it, but if it's an Italian brand, I'm probably like a 6 or 7 XL.
Okay.
Because sure, they just make them longer, the more X's you add. I don't get it.
All right. Anything else? Was that the last one? Okay, that was the last one. All right.
You know what? I love two of the four bad shirts.
Okay.
Or was it three?
Did I like one? I don't think I liked any. I don't know.
You didn't like the Bournemouth shirt?
I did not like the Bournemouth shirt.
Nah, you crazy, dog. That was so dope. I'm not going to wear another Premier League shirt, but I mean, would
respect
wear that
to
one.
Tyler Adams. He's going to be wearing it. But no, not my favorite of Bournemouth.
Nah, you crazy.
About Bournemouth shirts. All right.
Remember the old Hitafe with the big Burger King on the belly? That was fire. That was fire. That's y'all are cooked. That was fire.
Anyway, all right. Let's wrap up there, everybody.
For those of you who listen, thank you for as you listen to us looking at Church of Kids.
Thank you. Shout out to Tyler Adam. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. He was awesome, and we appreciated his time. And best of luck going forward at Bournemouth, and hopefully, Tyler's a part of the 2030 USMNT World Cup winning team. Mm. So we're hoping, this kicked off that we set off a chain reaction of the U.S. men winning
Mauricio's
the World Cup.
Mauricio's like, I listened to you on the Cooligans 3.5 years ago.
And I was inspired.
We must have you on the team.
So we appreciate it. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Hopefully the new people that are joining us after this World Cup.
There's
always a new kind of people getting on board.
A new kind of people.
A new people.
You're a new kind of people.
I said new people. I said new people, not the kind
of
people.
No, you just said new kind of people.
Did I say new kind of people?
Yeah, you did.
I don't. Wow. No memory of me saying that.
Hey, I hope you new kind people enjoy time.
Well, if if you're new to the sport, thank you so much for dedicating some of your time to listen to the Cooligans and joining us on we're not going anywhere, so yeah. this is the place to be. So tell your friends, and we appreciate you joining us. All right, and make sure you follow if you have not follow the podcast on all podcast platforms. Hit like. Subscribe on YouTube. We have a bunch of content on there. And you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans.
Oh, you know what? I was walking along the water in Brooklyn, at Brooklyn Bridge Park, and a bunch of young Latino teenagers walked past me, and one of them goes, "Hey, yo, that's your boy Alexis." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I listen to him all the time." They didn't stop and say hello.
No.
But hey, man, if that was you, if you're listening right now, or if you're watching right now, what's up? You could have said hello.
Look at that. All right.
I don't bite unless you dress like a sandwich.
Alexis getting catcalled by a bunch of young Latinos. All right.
My whole life.
We support it. All right. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We will see you soon. Now that domestic soccer is back, I hope all your teams lose. And we'll see you next week. Cheers, everybody.
Welcome, new people.